Hi, my name is Natalie Gochner. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center and have with me on the political left my good friend Shireen Gourvani.
Hello and hey to the listeners. Thanks for tuning in.
And on the political right, my good friend Dan McKay. Hi, Senator McKay.
Hello, everybody. I'd say it'd be good to be with you, but it's day two. We're just finishing day two of the session, and it feels like day 46.
It's a busy time of year, but we're going to go to the Beltway first. Washington, D.C., busy time there. Today, we're recording this before Thursday, but the voting rights legislation, the U.S. Senate failed to change the filibuster rule. This is interesting for a whole bunch of reasons. Want to hear both of your perspectives, but I thought it was so interesting that Senator Romney played such a critical role in taking on the Trump administration. He was featured on NBC's Meet the Press on Sunday. He basically criticized his Democratic colleagues for not involving Republicans in this election reform, and basically said, if you don't involve us, don't be surprised when we don't support it.
Yeah, that's right. So this is, you know, we've come to a moment where I think the dysfunction of Washington, D.C. for most people could not be on greater display. And we're seeing this from many angles, right? When we think about everything that happened, how long it took to get the infrastructure bill passed, and that was something that did have bipartisan support and did get moved through the Senate, and then kind of seeing the just stumbling and failing of the Build Back Better, which was, you know, parts of that were incredibly important to everyday people's lives when we're talking about reducing drug costs or really thinking about childcare investments in schools, all of that. So that has failed. So we've had just this delay. And I think now for me and for a lot of people on the left, voting rights is something that feels just incredibly critical at this moment, as we're seeing, you know, state after state put restrictive voting laws into place and trying to figure out what we're going to do about that. That has now also failed, in part because we don't have, you know, we can't get to 60, and we also don't have support to do cut out reform for the filibuster or other things. So what I think is happening is frustration on all fronts. But I have to say, I think if there were more people like Mitt Romney in our Senate, we would have a much more functional Senate, but that is not what we have. He is unique, and there are a few others like him, many who are actually set to retire. So I think we're in a situation where it's likely to get worse.
Dan, Senator Romney, at least on Meet the Press, said to the viewers that he was willing to work with Democrats on voting rights, but he never got a call from the White House. That really spoke to me, because if you're trying to make progress, Romney's gettable, right? He's been a reasonable guy that's shown a willingness to not play to a extreme base, and yet he didn't get called in. So that made me, you know, question whether this was politics or good policy that they were after.
I'm wondering if this isn't the last straw on the Biden administration. And people saying, well, isn't it too early? It's like, typically, presidents have the first 2 years of their term to really kind of get their agenda in place, right? And here we are in year one, and the losses continue to chalk up for the Biden administration. And when you see like a 33% approval rating from, you know, across the country, you're starting to wonder if people are willing to take chances for the president. And that's what you see from those kind of moderate middle Democrats, and even the moderate middle Republicans, are people like, are we willing to take chances? And what you see is that the Biden administration in some ways has totally been kidnapped by, whether it's, you know, good or bad, but it's been totally kidnapped by the far left part of the party. And what you have is that far left part of the party hanging the moderates out to dry. And that's why they're saying, look, we don't need Romney. We don't need to go to these guys in the middle. They'll come along. But they can actually get away with that kind of stuff when you see presidential approval numbers above 50. But when you're down in the 30s, the low 30s, you're not going to see a lot of people stepping out to save the president.
Shireen, I would say, you know, we had this week President Biden do a 2-hour press conference. And that has the spirit of a reset for me. Like, you can't reset it like this, but he, you know, he stood and held himself accountable and, you know, shared some insights. But he also got the bad news, Shireen, that the Supreme Court struck down the vaccination or test mandate for U.S. workers, except in federal health care facilities. That was bad news for the administration.
That's bad news too, you know, and I think there's, can understand, you know, Dan's articulation of this being a hijacking by the far left. I think what we also have is actually an incredibly complicated time, right? We see the continued economic impacts of COVID. We see COVID numbers spiking out of control in our state and across this country. We know that there are big problems happening. I mean, it seems like we might be on the brink of a war in Europe. I mean, we are seeing tanks, you know, entering Ukraine. A lot is going on. This is not an easy time. But I also think there are very clear failures that have happened from this administration. Part of that is either building that coalition that they needed across party lines, which they obviously had to have with a 50-50 Senate. But I think there's more to it than that. The times are so deeply divided, so deeply complicated, and this wave of COVID just will not stop.
Mm-hmm. Dan, what did you make of the Supreme Court ruling that they basically rejected Donald Trump's request to shield his January 6th records from the House committee? What did you make of this ruling? It was an 8-1, I think Clarence Thomas being the minority justice there. But I don't know how soon the timing is, but we're within weeks away of having more insight about what was going on in the White House on January 6th.
Yeah, and you know, anytime government officials try to hide records or like keep things from public or that kind of thing from a national security perspective or whatever it might be, I always get a little suspect, right? And I think that that's like a good government is transparent. I know there's some things we probably don't need to know like at that moment, but we're long past January 6th. I think we can know what this stuff is.
Yeah. Shireen, did you sign up for these free tests that the U.S. government's willing to send to every household in the country? I was praying that the website wouldn't go down because I thought that would be just one punch too many for the Biden administration.
True. Yes. So this is a success. So this week, actually a day early, the website went public and you could go on and order. And I encourage everyone to do this. I tweeted it out. I posted it on Facebook. I know other people have been sharing this information. It's incredibly easy to find, but you can order 4 free tests that will be mailed to your home in the next few weeks. And there's also a large shipment of N95 masks that are coming out to communities as well. Right now, my understanding is that we do still have, in Salt Lake County at least, N95s available at our libraries, and I think they're working to restock those as well. So if people are looking for high quality masks or if they're looking for tests, obviously this is an area where there's been a big lack of supply, but there are going to be there's some relief coming. But what I found out is when I went to register that my husband had already gotten on and registered. So it kicked me out of the system and told me that tests had already been ordered to my house. But it's something that everyone can do. And I encourage them to have those on hand.
Yeah.
COVIDtest.gov, right?
Yep. Yeah. Dan, so we now in COVID, Utah's average daily COVID case rate most recently was the 4th highest in the U.S. when adjusted for population. I'm not sure what to make of that. Is it the timing? Is it our young population? Is it our recklessness? Is it? But what I want to ask you is what is the approach on Capitol Hill right now? And we can talk about masks, and we'll do that. But how are state leaders viewing their leadership role in COVID?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, we saw the kind of the Omicron variant spike in what I call gateway states, right? Where our population is more likely to come in from other parts of the world. New York, Florida, California, you know, those are states that are more likely to get our inbound travelers that are bringing with them virus or whatever they might be. And so you see the spreads there first. And, you know, you'll remember just before Christmas, you had football games getting canceled and all the, you know, these things from high take up rates, right? Or high infection rates. And now they're starting to see like the decrease, you know, and starting to drop off on a per capita. We're now behind them on the rolling average perspective. And we're spiking, you know, a couple days ago, they think. But, you know, we'll start to see our downtake. And then the question is, how and what do we do from this, right? You have early research that's saying, hey, Omicron is actually, you know, somebody gets Omicron, one, symptoms are less than they are under Delta. They're not no symptoms. There are symptoms. They're less. And two, that a post-Omicron infection, it actually provides you a better antibody response to, you know, to Delta. And so Delta is the more dangerous of the variants. And as a result, like, people are saying, hey, if you're going to get it, you're better off with the potential of Omicron, I guess, in some ways than you are with Delta. But that doesn't mean abandon safety. It doesn't mean, you know, goodness, start having COVID parties like we used to have chicken pox parties when we were kids.
Yeah. Dan, what do you make of the point that everyone wants to make that, you know, Omicron may not be as serious of an infection, but if you get 3-4 times as many, it still will have the same impact on a hospital system?
Yeah, well, and yes, but you have to look at the ICU take up when you're trying to look at the same impact, right? The ICU impact is significantly lower under Omicron than it is under Delta or any other previous variants. And so the ICU take up bed is really what we're watching, because it's the non-fungible bed count. It doesn't move. It's a fixed to finite quantity. And so we're keeping an eye on those numbers. In fact, we got numbers the other day out of the University of Utah Health System that showed that the ICU, there were 106 cases that were hospitalized that day, which is, you know, 4 more than the peak from a year ago from Delta. And they were saying, well, yeah, that's a lot, but the ICU was significantly lower. I think it was down around, and I don't want to misquote numbers, but it was much lower. It's like a third of the Delta variant ICU take up. And interestingly, those who were vaccinated were not ICU, just like they were under Delta. So we still see the vaccines are effective for preventing long-term, you know, COVID, and they're also effective for keeping people out of the ICU and those kinds of things. What it isn't effective, it seems, is that it's really not stopping the spread of Omicron. It's because its symptoms are so dramatically lower, people are actually walking around infected and not knowing that they're infected. And that's really what's causing a lot of the problem.
You know, in our next segment, we're going to talk about local control. We'll also talk about independent redistricting. Stay tuned, everybody.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Shireen Gorbani on the left.
Dan McKay on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. And Shireen, I want to go to you first in this segment. We ended last segment with Dan basically commenting on, you know, what is a state leader's role in COVID at this point with Omicron and all that we've been through over the last nearly 2 years. What do you think our state leaders should be doing?
Yeah, so I mean, what I can tell you from working in a healthcare organization is that we're in a situation again where our healthcare workers are being pushed absolutely to the brink. We have a lot of people who are sick, but on top of that, we have a lot of sick people coming in. And it is an unbelievable weight to carry across our communities. And we know that we're also seeing that same challenge in our schools. And I think for me, one of the things that, you know, I don't envy those who are in public life right now, because I think it's an incredibly complex situation where difficult decisions are being made every day. But the thing that I find the most frustrating is how much of it is happening through the lens of partisanship, as opposed to really thinking about what are those core things that are really central to keeping people safe, to keeping them fed, to making sure that we've got, you know, the kind of basic support systems, like in particular schools, open. And when we have this kind of uncontrolled spread in our community, I just think the fact that we did not see the kind of promise that was made to really focus on keeping schools open and thinking through what we could be doing to protect those kind of core functions in our society, to do everything that we, you know, really prioritize actions there, whether it's testing, masks, whatever it might be. The fact that we're in a situation now where schools, many schools are closed again, and I happen to know that that's a place where a lot of people get, you know, their only solid meal each day. So I think I'm frustrated. I know the public is frustrated. I'm certain lawmakers are frustrated. But it's unfortunate to me that I think we're seeing some things that maybe could have been addressed by a little bit more aggressive planning. Mm.
You know, we're only a couple of days into the legislative session, but boy, Dan, did it start with a bang. And it goes in a couple of ways, but COVID is everywhere, and so everywhere that we have our own Senate President Stuart Adams testing positive for COVID twice before publicly announcing he was negative, and then, you know, recovering to say that he was actually positive, but it was close. And I don't know. It seemed like there was a lot of either misinformation, spin, or dishonesty. I don't know. What was it, Dan? Because it's really hard for the public to want to model that kind of behavior, right?
Yeah, I don't know all of the calculus that went into it. What I know is that President Adams looked, felt healthy, and was great to participate in the legislative process. He was doing what he's elected to do, and I take him at his face value, right? He felt like he was doing all he could to prevent the spread, and at the same time acknowledge and resolve his duties that he's supposed to do it. I can't complain.
Shireen, in many ways, what happened to President Adams is a symbol of what's been happening through this whole experience, and that is we get a lot of mixed messages, right? He gets a negative test. He gets a positive test. He's, you know, been isolated for 5 days. He feels like he feels good. He feels like he's following the rules, but the tests aren't always accurate. I mean, it's pretty hard.
Yeah, it's hard. You know, I think there are a lot of layers to it, obviously. And I think one of them is the kind of twisting of messages is the part that felt particularly difficult for me. I think when people are getting a negative test or a positive test, and I would just encourage people, especially if you're, you know, I think, like I said, everyone's tired of this. We're all sick of it. But if you get that positive test and, you know, continue to have symptoms, the advice is that you should continue to distance and at the very least wear a mask. And we certainly didn't see him doing that.
Yeah. Dan and Shireen, so I come to you in the political middle, and I would define what's going on with masks as the left wants mask mandates, the right wants no mask mandates. And maybe the way to introduce it, since it's been such a hot topic, and Dan, you've been the sponsor of the bill that passed the Senate that lifted the mask mandate in both Summit and Salt Lake County, still has to get through the House, as I understand it. But Dan, explain to our listeners what you mean by local control when the state swoops in and takes away that kind of local control from a female mayor in Salt Lake County, a female mayor of Salt Lake City, and also, you know, does the same thing in Summit County.
So I'm a little bit like, you asked the question from a from one part, and then you swung just a little bit and then ruined the female part of it, right? So, like,
I would just add
I'm not
Democrats.
Standing in front of a cannon. Yeah. I'm going to hold the fuse. Hey, Anthony, as our producer, he's got some matches. Maybe, Anthony, if you just lit it just right, the cannonball will miss me, okay? So I'll try and dance around that.
Dan, can I tell you the reason I threw in the female part is It is a dynamic that goes noticed by many of us. So I say it for that reason, but continue.
If I showed you right now the number of emails, you know, because I am keeping an informal poll and I figured, you know, maybe this would be entertaining. But if I showed you the number of emails supporting versus negative, it is almost 50-50, right? Mm-hmm. Some saying, hey, this is horrible. Some saying this is great. Thank you so much. But ironically, oh, more than anything, I'm hearing from females that are really appreciative that they don't want to wear the mask anymore. And it's overwhelmingly that they're the number of people. Those are the ones who are emailing me.
Interesting.
So they seem to be the most grateful that, you know, the females seem to be most grateful that this horrible male ran a bill to overturn the females' mandates at the state or at the county and the local level. All I can say is, there are states with mask mandates that are seeing a similar R number or infection number, you know, from Omicron as there are those without mask mandates. And we're experiencing waves at different times, as it's rolling throughout the country. But what we are clearly seeing is that people that are, you know, staying out of the ICU are vaccinated, and that we generally have a decreased amount of symptoms from Omicron than we do from the other variants of the virus. And it is much less deadly. So for that reason, it's like, you know, you look at those who have mask mandates, those that don't, when the R number is the same, what you can gather from that is that the mandate itself isn't really doing anything. And if people really want to wear a mask because it makes them feel safer and they want to avoid people without masks, by all means, do those things. Follow the governor's advice. If you don't feel well, stay home or stay away from others. That is always been great advice. And then wear a mask if that's what you'd like to do.
Shireen, let's hear your commentary. But as I pass it to you, I'm reminded of the quotes, you know, that government is best that governs least. So that would, you know, say get rid of the mandate. But there's also the best government is the government within walking distance, which would prove for, you know, the closest to the people, local government making these kinds of decisions.
And the closest walking distance is your own living room where you make your own decisions. That's a crazy level of government to trust, I know, but that's the one I like.
It's funny that you say that, Dan, because just a few weeks ago, you were absolutely losing it about Democrats and moving towards abolishing representative government. You may remember that just a few weeks ago. So I think the thing that's so upsetting here in the kind of bigger context for me is I keep wondering when we became so feeble of mind or character that we were unwilling to put on a mask because it may protect our neighbors or those around us. I think I've mentioned before, I'm a big aqua aerobics enthusiast. In these last few weeks, as we've been seeing these numbers spike out of control, I'm not going because it's one of the few places that on a regular basis, I interact with individuals who are older than I am, significantly older than I am. And I'm doing my best to try to protect those people in my community at a moment when we're seeing a surge. I think this also is tied into, for me, just a deep concern that when we really think about the possibility of ideas or places that we could go or the ways that government or individuals who are serving people. You know, when we think about the fact that in the first days of the legislature, I can't see downtown and I live on the edge of it. We're dealing with air quality issues. We're dealing with a housing crisis. We have people who do not have a place to sleep indoors. And the first thing that we see is the overturning of a mask mandate because, quote, freedom. I am so frustrated with this, and I know so many others are as well. I would just continue to ask people to have empathy and to try to build these bridges and have conversations that are difficult. Dan and I just had a pretty difficult one. We've continued to have those difficult conversations. What we need is people to, in moments like these, turn to those who are in public health and try to take that advice and to see the hyper-partisan reaction that's happening that is based solely in the faith of partisanship is so deeply just destructive, I think, to trust in government, to trust in our neighbors. And that is a path that I'm very worried that we are going to have a hard time turning ourselves around on.
Dan, I want to go to this incredible reporting that KSL Deseret News did on the independent redistricting. But just right before I do that, can I just ask you to comment on what I find frustrating, you know, going off of what Shireen just said, is that when a supermajority sweeps in and acts with so much power, it really, it defeats people. And people feel a lack of trust in their institutions, a lack of trust in their government. And I just wanted to ask you if on Capitol Hill there's ever any accommodation made for how these sorts of power sweeps make people feel that aren't of the same opinion?
You know, it's a great question, right? It's tough to balance, I think, those feelings and trying to balance reality or manage things based on, you know, how people are going to feel about one thing or another. It's just tough to balance all the time. It's kind of, you know, I was just trying to think of an analogy that is, you know, is similar to it. But I think there are a lot of great ways that the legislature actually does this to try and find ways where it's a win without somebody getting the win they wanted, right? Yeah. And that legislative process happens all the time. And honestly, I have to say, our governor does a great job of encouraging the legislature to find solutions that don't make people feel like they lost.
Well, we've got a lot more days to go. Real quickly, great reporting by the Deseret News, KSL. They looked at the emails that lawmakers received for the redistricting commission. Their analysis showed a whopping 930 people reached out to lawmakers asking that the independent commission maps be chosen, while only 11 people sent emails approving of the maps lawmakers drew. We're always told to write our representative. It didn't seem to work in this case, Shireen.
You know, I just got a message. I want to shout out to the listener who sent me an Instagram message saying that they were not going to contact their senator about this mask mandate thing because it was Dan and they are supportive of it. And they knew that they wouldn't want to, that they wouldn't meet a welcome inbox. And I said, you know what? You should email him anyway. And I think that we should really take the opportunity to hear in this moment say, this is a good time to contact your representatives, but you really should foster those relationships outside of the session. These 45 days are an absolute train coming at people so fast they can't even manage all of the messages. So build those relationships outside of the session and let people know even when you think it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Dan, we'll give you the last rap.
Hey, everybody. I'll just say what I'll say to Shireen. Be nice to Dan McKay during the legislative session. he really is a tired, you know, crazy person. I totally get it. I don't agree with him all the time, but I'm sure happy he does what he does.
All right.
Thank you from me.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. Natalie Gochner in the political center, Shireen Gourbani on the left, Dan McKay on the right, and Anthony Scoma produces the program. Thanks, everybody, for listening.